We know, like us, our listeners spend countless hours every week taking care of loved ones, but most probably don't have an estate plan. Sampson McPhee Lawyers can help. Estate planning allows you to make the big decisions now, like who will take care of your kids if you pass away, and allows you to control how your assets will be distributed and managed. Estate planning is extra important for parents, common law partners, and people with blended families. Call Kelly at Sampson McPhee at 902-563-5906 to find out about special pricing for our listeners. Hi, Jess.
Hi, Sarah.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
Behind the mic again?
Yeah.
I figured out the perfect... I think I've talked about this before, and like Yetis have been around for how long?
A long time.
Or longer. And I finally just figured out the clue, like to get the perfect tea.
What is it?
Well, I don't think I finally just figured it out. I think I forgot that I figured it out before and just stopped doing it. But you got to just get your tea the optimal temperature and then put it in the Yeti.
Yeah, you can't make the tea in the Yeti because it stays hot forever, the boiling water.
I know, but who has time in the morning to let it sit?
I think the last episode we were talking about Yeti versus Stanley. You're back to the Yeti?
No, I have my tea and my Yeti and my water and my Stanley. Anyway.
Well, we have a really good episode for everyone today. This is an important one. It's a new one for us around the morning meeting. Funny enough, we put a poll up today to see who people thought was more of a planner between the two of us, Jess or Sarah. I know who I would answer. Jess, who do you think is the better planner or the bigger planner between the two of us?
You, 100%. I don't plan a thing.
Same, but you know what? This poll, girlfriend, is really close. Let me read the results right now. Our listenership is split. We tricked them on this one. Right now, it's sitting at 56%, 44%.
So it's split because in my work life, I am a different person than my personal life.
Right.
And certain things I plan in my personal life and other things I just don't give a rat's ass about, which are really important to other people, right?
Right.
So like, I think a lot of times I'm reactive to things like this topic, right? Where I'm like, oh, that's so far, taxes.
Yeah.
What else? Like things that like I should probably be very planning. And I'm just like, oh, I have months to do that or years or whatever. Right?
I think people too, because they know you're the early bird, they associate that with like well-planned, like you plan to get to an event early and I'm just like getting there.
No, but I'm an early bird because I have a child.
My teeth. No, I mean like you're always on time. Like 15 minutes late is early is late to you.
Oh,
and I think people equate that with management. Planning purposes, but that's just
perhaps.
Time management. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree that it's me as well. But today we are going to talk about planning, but a different type of planning. And we have a very special guest to help us navigate this conversation. And we're going to talk about the importance of estate planning. I know that this means we're kind of facing our own mortality a little bit, but I think it's really important for us and our loved ones, for all of us, especially in our age range. Like if you're a 30-something or another age, but you own property or a business or you have kids or dependents or anything. I just think proper planning now helps everybody in the future. So we're going to dive into this topic a little deeper. And with us today to help us through this very important topic is Kelly O'Brien. Kelly is an associate lawyer with Sampson McPhee. She started with Sampson McPhee as a summer student during her first year of law school in 2016 and has been with the firm ever since. Kelly received her law degree from Dalhousie University in 2018. Prior to that, she studied public relations at Mount St. Vincent University. Kelly applied and was accepted to law school while on an exchange in France during the third year of her Bachelor of Public Relations and started at Dal Law the following September.
Kelly has a fairly general law practice with a focus on estate planning, administration, and litigation. Kelly is currently a student in STEP Canada's Diploma in Trusts and Estates program, working towards receiving a designation as a Trusts and Estates practitioner. While Kelly grew up in Sydney River, she and her husband now live in Myra. Outside of work, Kelly enjoys cooking, baking, running, and traveling, especially to Disney World. And just having been to Disney World in April, I feel like we can connect on this.
If nothing else, on Disney. It's like, not the writing or the cooking, the Disney world.
Oh, God, no. Well, I was reading and I was like, okay, cooking, no. Baking, no. Running, no. Disney, yes.
Well, let's welcome Kelly to the morning meeting. Welcome around the table, Kelly. Hi.
Hi, thank you.
How you doing?
Good.
We're excited to have you here. And we're excited to talk about the importance of estate planning. And who would have known? We put this topic on social to let people know what we were about to talk about and get their questions in. And people are excited for this.
Yeah.
You have a little bit of a fan club, believe it or not. People are fired up about this topic.
Our age is showing, clearly.
Yeah.
But like, to me, like when I hear estate planning, I'm like, estate? Well, I don't have one of those. Like, you know, an estate. But like when you get down to like the nitty gritty and the bones of it, I'm like, oh, and like when Kelly, I think it was like when I read something and it was like, what will happen to your children? And I'm like, oh my God. I said, I panicked, texted Daniel at work and I was like, we need to estate plan now. Like the panic that overtook me, because it's like, yeah, that's terrifying to think of like not having a plan in place. But like also you try not to go there, like morbidly think like, if we get hit by a bus tomorrow, who's going to look after our child? You know, you try not to have those thoughts. But at the end of the day, how important is it to have those conversations, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think anyone who's a planner out there.
Sarah?
Yeah. I do. I have thought about this a lot. And I have, Pat and I have conversations about it all the time. Anytime I travel, I write things down on a piece of paper, but it's just so unofficial. And if I'm going to do that every time, I might as well make the time to make it official and do some serious estate planning. I honestly think we haven't yet, just because of timing and just not even really knowing where to begin, which I think is another reason why we really want to have this sit down chat with you. So we can kind of just break down a little bit of the barriers around it and what it means and why we should be doing it and what are some of the first steps that we can take to do it. So Kelly, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, about your work, and about the importance of estate planning?
Okay, so I, like you mentioned, I am a lawyer and I've been practicing with Sampson McPhee my whole career. I started with them as a summer student, so it's been something like 7.5 years now, which is crazy to me to think about that. But I do a lot of estate work, both on the estate administration side, which is after the person passes away, but also the estate planning side, which makes sense. And I also do estate litigation and general litigation. Estate litigation being when things, if there's an issue that has to be dealt with in the court, that's the litigation side. So we see a lot of really interesting issues that way. It also, though, informs my practice. So I carry that into the estate planning side, seeing different scenarios where things go wrong. I will say, to carry off what you're talking about in the intro, I am definitely a planner. And I'm sure that's not much of a surprise.
Yeah.
But doing what I do, and then this year throwing in the student piece, I definitely have to be a planner in order to keep track of it. But that was always my personality anyway. So I definitely fall in that group with you, Sarah.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I feel like a good plan, you know, Jess, we talk about this a little bit, like I can plan and plan and plan, but not do anything. Like I can make all these great ideas, but I'm less quick to action. I will ideate. I will think about it. I will write it all out. I'll plan it. But actually doing it, which makes sense. Like I've thought about starting the estate planning process so many times. I'm planning to plan. I just haven't put the plan in action yet, right? And Jess, like, I think it's fair to say you're quicker to act, right? Like
definitely.
You will take that action and you'll move through things.
When I decide I'm doing it, I'll just go and do it.
Yeah.
I won't sit on it.
Yes, exactly. So it's a really interesting, I think, balance for us. But yeah, so Kelly, what is estate planning? Like, to kind of debunk what Jess said, you don't have to own a grand estate to do some estate planning. So let's just kind of break down in simple terms, what is it? What does it include? Who should be doing it?
One thing, so estate planning is really broad, but to try and give it a general short explanation, it's really planning for what happens in the event of your incapacity and also your death, and trying to cover off to make sure your loved ones are taken care of in that situation, and also to make sure you're taken care of, especially if we're talking about incapacity. it can include, like, people know a will. Some people would be familiar with power of attorney, which is if you're incapacitated, to give somebody the power to make legal and financial decisions for you. That is, in my view, really the most important document for, like, across the board for everyone, even if, like, we're not talking about people having kids, businesses, things like that. The power of attorney is absolutely everybody should have one. The other one that is common is the personal directive, which appoints somebody to make medical decisions for you if you're not able to make medical decisions for yourself. But your estate plan's a lot broader than that too, because it's also talking about things like your life insurance policy, making sure you have enough life insurance. Do you have a beneficiary named on your life insurance policy, which changes how the money gets distributed to people and can have some tax saving implications, but that's not right for everyone. So we talk about all of that stuff. We talk about investments. We can talk about even education savings plans for kids. How you hold your property is another big part of it. So whose name is on your house? If you own other properties, whose names are on those? And then bank accounts. Are all of your accounts joint? If you're married, do you and your spouse have everything joint? Are there a couple accounts here and there that are just in one person's name? So making sure that all of what you have in those categories fit together and suit your family, and make sure that people obviously understand the consequences of having what they have in place. And it's a custom process that you do have to know a little bit about the person in order to make sure what we've set up suits them. And the other big part of it is that it does change throughout your life what you're going to want that to look like.
Right. And this might be a stupid question, but I ask what everyone else might be thinking. When you say, like, power of attorney, right? Is that what you said? Power of attorney?
Yeah.
Making those medical decisions, whatever. Like, my mind goes to, like, so is that different than, like, your next of kin? Because that's what I think of. Like, Incapacitated. Doesn't my next of kin do that? Is that different than a power of attorney? Like, what's...
So the power of attorney is for the financial and legal decisions. That's different from the personal directive, which is the medical decision. You're right about the next of kin. So I didn't include this here. I'll often tell people that I think the personal directive is the least important, generally speaking. That is because your next of kin will be able to make medical decisions for you. For some people, whoever the next of kin is, maybe the last person they want making decisions. Mm-hmm. So that's where it can be really important for someone. And depending on your family situation, so somebody who's married, your next of kin is going to be your spouse.
Right.
So they can make medical decisions for you if you're incapacitated. And part of that is for obvious reasons, that the hospital is always going to need somebody to make a medical decision for you. So the government has written a ranking system. They don't get into specifying, like, in a family, if you have 8 kids, like, who's going to make the decision, or if it falls to, let's say, your sibling and you have 3, it doesn't get into specifying which one of them is going to make the decision. So if you particularly feel that one of your kids should be the one making the decision, that's where it can be important
to make sure you have this in place.
Yeah. No, exactly. The other thing that can be done in there that some people include is dealing with heroic measures and whether or not they want heroic measures to be taken in the event their survival is unlikely, people who don't want to be kept alive artificially. And you can get into really specific directions on those. And some people do, like organ donation can be in there, but certain things, if you're opposed to certain medical treatments, you could get into specifying that as well. You could get really as specific as you want, but we generally don't do that. I'm of the view that if possible, if you have the appropriate person to make a decision, that a lot of times you are better off picking somebody to make the decision, because they can then be live to the situation and make a decision in the circumstances, where it can be really hard for you to sit down today and say, here's what I would want in 40 years. And you don't know what the facts look like around that.
Right. That's such a good point. Like, those things change.
And that was actually one of my questions when you were saying too about, like, how it could change. It's going to change over the years. Like, so that's what I think of. I'm like, well, why do it now? When I think about my parents, I'm like, do they even have, like, what do they have? And I think about that as something that, like, older parents do, right? Like, Because I think in our young heads, we're like, well, we have until we're 80. But that's obviously not the case.
Yeah.
So, and like when you're saying like it's going to change over time. So like, talk us through that. Like, who is estate planning? Like, what age are you? Like, is there a best time to come and do it? Or is it just basically if you own any assets? Like, what's the scoop on that?
I wouldn't tie it to just owning assets. Definitely, a lot of us at this stage in life have more debt than assets. So we may look at it and think like, I don't really care who gets my debt.
Yeah, right.
But the thing that people don't factor in when they think that is a lot of the time your debt is insured. So for example,
you mortgage is in your home or isn't?
Is insured. So a lot of times like your mortgage will have insurance so that if you die, your mortgage gets paid. Or people have life insurance in place like as an alternative to that so that you have enough life insurance that your mortgage would be paid out if you died. Sometimes it's the same thing with a car. So that I definitely wouldn't take a look at kind of what you feel you have as a net worth because, and Robert Sampson is famous for saying this, most of us are worth more dead than we are alive.
Yeah, I've heard and that.
You've heard that?
Yeah.
That's important to keep in mind because you may think, look, it's not that important because I'm not worth anything, but chances are you are. But relative to like your life situation, again, a lot of people, it's going to make sense to do this, but some of the places where it's going to be super important is if you're a parent,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to want to get into picking who takes care of your kids if you pass away. And another piece that, and this gets forgotten a lot, and I don't know how many people are actually including this in estate planning, is who would take care of your kids also if you were incapacitated. So if you're not able, because that's separate from the will. So parents, it's super important. The other reason it's really important for parents is because you'll probably want to set some parameters as to the estate that you don't realize you have, when that should get paid to your kids. Because if you don't have a will in place, your kids get everything at age 19. Which isn't going to suit most people, especially if your estate when you're dead is worth more than you have right now. Most people probably aren't going to want their kids to have a couple hundred thousand dollars at age 19. Like I know right. I don't want me to have that. At
yeah,
age
I wouldn't want me to have that.
Right.
No,
that's probably not the best idea. No.
There's other people, the one that a lot of people don't realize is common law partners. So in Nova Scotia, common law partners are not included in, there's a law that the government writes for people who don't have a will. And it's fairly outdated, but it does not include common law partners.
What?
So, yeah.
Wow. Because there are more and more, I would argue, that people are deciding right. not to get legally married.
Yeah. And a lot of people think that after 2 years living together, you're common law. And they just assume that that means you have the same rights as spouses and that if somebody dies, everything goes to the other. There's absolutely no rights for common law partners in Nova Scotia at law. So you don't automatically have anything. You don't have the ability to be the personal representative of the other person's estate and you don't presumptively entitled to anything. So you would have to make a claim against the estate. And that's done the same way as when common law partners separate, that there's a test for it that really gets into looking at like, what was the relationship like? Who did what?
Wow.
And would it be unfair for the estate to keep everything because the partner gave certain things and put in effort in the relationship? And therefore, it's called unjust enrichment. And you have to look at whether the estate would be unjustly enriched. And it's a lot of evidence that has to be brought forward. Now, you can get around that if the whole family gets along and they agree to pass everything off. That doesn't happen in most cases.
Yeah, nothing gets tensions higher than a bit of grief sprinkled in. Like, you know,
all I can think of right now is the amount of women that are going to send this podcast to their partners and be like, you need to pop the question. Like, enough is enough. Like, it's time. Like,
yeah.
So many people are going to get engaged now.
Well, there's other implications to that too, because like if you're common law and you have kids, you still like the common law partner is not entitled to apply to deal with the estate.
Wow.
So that's, and I mean, another reason that's kind of related to that is even when you are included as a spouse, the government's will actually leaves, it splits your estate between the spouse and the kids. So if you were to pass away and you're married and you have kids, your spouse is going to get a certain amount, but the kids themselves get a portion.
Oh, so if you have a will and you have everything written down specifically what you want, that trumps what the government has in place in the event you don't have a will.
Yeah.
Okay, say that one more time. So Daniel and I are married. We have Logan. I pass away tomorrow. Daniel gets some and Logan gets some.
Yes. So, and it would all depend on how you hold things. So if
Logan's four.
Yeah. Well, but Logan wouldn't get it himself, but somebody would have to hold it for him and through like right. supervised by the court.
But like,
and
how much
have to
is
hand
that
it over to him at age 19?
What?
So, and that's, there's a formula for it. And it's a little like the act, it's called the Intestate Succession Act. It is very old. It actually, it still talks about, it uses the term illegitimate children.
Oh, my,
it refers to your kids as issue is the term.
How dare they?
Well,
I mean, they are, but
they
like
kids, whoever wrote yeah, that. Yeah. No.
But it really depends on how many kids. So your case where you have one, your spouse would get half and your child would get half. And your spouse, though, first we look at, there's what we call the preferential share. So let's say you're the only one who owns your house, your name is the only one on it, then your spouse can then claim the home, or they can claim the first $50,000, which again shows how outdated this is, because the idea is kind of that it would cover a home, and $50,000 is obviously not doing that these days.
So Patrick would have to split
one bathroom and the kitchen maybe.
And Patrick would have to split his between the three kids and him. He'd be one fourth of the house.
He has nothing left. He wouldn't be able to raise them.
So in the event that you have more than one kid, the spouse gets a third, and the two thirds is split between however many kids.
Okay.
But they can take the home, and that would only come into play like if both of you are on the deed, then you would just record a proof of death, and then it ends up in just the spouse's name. So that doesn't come into play, and they would just take the $50,000.
Okay.
And that's the other thing too, like that I think we need to shed a major light on, is that nobody wants to think about their parents passing away. Like, who wants to go there, right? And especially, like, obviously, we know that, like, our grandparents are eventually going to pass away. They're older, you know, we've grown up with them. So, like, when they do, it's like, okay, we know this would happen, but nothing really prepares you for your parents, especially if they're younger. And going through my husband losing both his parents in the last couple of years, it's such a hard time as it is. And I could not believe, Kelly, like the legal things that come with that immediately after the person dies. How like you don't even have 2 seconds to grieve and you all of a sudden have all of these very stressful decisions to make. If, for instance, there wasn't an executor on things like with Daniel's mother, like Brian, her spouse was on pretty much everything. So that was easier. So, but then when he got sick, he ended up like one of the children had to be the executor. And like, it made things, I don't want to say easier because that's a terrible term to use like in this situation, but like we always say like
more manageable.
Had that not been, I can't even think, because it's like so many kids that things needed to be split through by, right? Like, so it was very complicated, but like the calls that had to been made, the emails that have had to go out, like, it's exhausting and it's a lot. So like,
so Jess, Brian had the wits about him to be able to, like, he knew better. He knew
because what
when
we
that
went
happened.
Through, because what he went through with Gina, right? He was like, oh my God, like,
yeah.
Like,
he knew that he had to update that at the
for
time
sure.
and change it and prepare things for ultimately his own passing, but to make it easier for his kids. Like, really, that's an act of service to your
for
children.
Sure. Yeah. And he might have did that. I don't know. I'd have to talk to Daniel. He might have done it like after Gina passed away, like before he even knew he was sick himself. I don't know. But it was a learning experience for everybody. And I even said to my brother, like, we need to sit mom and dad down and talk about this. Because like, if this happens, like, just think about like the fights, the frustration that like you're already so emotional and all of these decisions have to be made. I think that like the more proactive we can be about these things, although we don't technically want it, we don't want to have to go there. Like we don't want to have to sit down and have these conversations, but we need to, right?
Yeah.
Like
I talk to my mom about it all the time, actually, and my mom and dad for that same reason. I'm a little different than you, Jess, and I think it's probably from experiences growing up. Like I know we don't want to think about it. We don't like to think about our loved ones passing away. I feel like maybe it's because of life experiences. I don't know, but I think about it a lot. Like not that it overcomes my like thoughts, but it is a fear of mine that I think I know how easily someone's here today and gone tomorrow. Like I yes. know I am very comfortable with the fact that tomorrow is not guaranteed to us so that we have to plan and live accordingly to that. Like I think that is kind of always in the back of my brain a little bit. So I think like me and Pat have had many conversations about estate planning. We just actually haven't done it. So we're no better, but it's there. And same as you, Jess, like I say that to my parents all the time. Not that I'm constantly thinking about my parents passing away. I mean, that is devastating to even consider, but I am able to kind of separate that and think pragmatically on, you know, mom, dad, you have a lot of assets. You have kids mm-hmm. and grandkids. I hope you live for the next 50 years, but it is something you need to consider, if not for your own sake, for ours. Like I say that to my mom all the time, please right. do it for me. Like I don't want to have to figure this out with my four siblings and our families in, right. this, in that grief-stricken time.
It's right? so hard. And like, yeah. I think that even like we should all just be sitting down with our parents and just saying like, can we just have an open conversation about this and take notes? Like, well, we're all, everyone's healthy and feeling well. Like, you know what I
yeah.
mean?
Yeah.
It's so important, but I just, people just don't like to go there. Like, what are you doing on a Saturday night over wine? Like, okay, like let's go through, but it's maybe better than the alternative of you were saying like, hit you're having to sit down with your sibling. It's, I've witnessed it firsthand.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's yeah. so when you're...
And I mean, Daniel's family all get along, right? Not every right. family situation looks
right.
like that.
Oh my
like
gosh.
They are all close and friendly
Thank
and caring
God.
And kind and, you know, but that's not the reality for a lot of families.
Kelly's I face think, right now.
Yeah. I think maybe, Kelly, you can tell us, of course, but... And Jess, maybe it's as simple as just having... Maybe the opening conversation, maybe it's not a big sit down like... Okay, let's plan your estate together. But maybe it's as simple as like, hey, mom, dad, do you have a will? Where is
right.
it? How do we know? Is it with what law firm? Is it
Are
in
we
a
even allowed
safety
to ask
deposit
that,
box?
Feel-
like, what does that look like, Kelly? Like,
My
what is the usual
like,
steps
None
for that?
Of your business.
No, you can definitely ask them. You can't ask me if they do.
Right.
But you can ask them and they can tell you if they want. We, like as a practice, law firms used to store wills for people. We've moved away from that. So like I tell everybody that I meet with that when you're on your way home from here, if you don't have one already, go get a fireproof safety deposit
right.
box and put all these documents in it.
You don't store them anymore.
No. And one of the reasons for that is sometimes the families would never know about the will.
Right.
If we have them.
Interesting.
And so
Interesting.
There was a lot of wills like when old law firms were closing that you may go in and find like 400 wills that no one ever claimed.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's worth just the ask. Like, have you done estate planning? Do you have
and
a will?
And we need to know where they are because if you're gone, you know, it's like the Cinderella story years later. She opens up the photo album and there's the will years later. Do you
yeah.
know what I'm talking about?
Cinderella yeah, no,
story,
and they are like,
Hillary Duff,
we,
come on.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon for people to not be able to find them and have no idea. Like we, the lawyers locally, get an email, I would say almost once a week, where Robert Sampson actually sends them out because he's the secretary of the Cape Breton Bar. So he sends out an email and it will say like, so-and-so passed away. The family's wondering if anyone did their estate planning. And then it's on all of us to look at the names and say like, yeah, I did that one. No, I didn't.
Wow.
But there's a lot of families that have no idea. A lot of them think,
God.
Well, my family member would have done that, but they have no idea where it is. So that's important. And I'll often, like when I meet with people and we're signing the documents, I'll tell them, it's up to you. You don't have to tell anybody that you did your will. But if you're comfortable with it, it's at least a good idea to tell your executor where it's at.
Why not tell people? I mean, is that just an outdated kind of sociocultural practice too? Or no, maybe I'm thinking of it too simplistic terms, is it that whole concept of we're worth more dead than alive kind of thing that people are like trying to protect? Or what? Why don't we talk about that more often?
In part, for some people are super private about it.
Right.
And other times it's because they put something in it that they don't want anyone to know until they die.
Okay.
We'll often tell people, yeah, like, your will can be changed a lot, as many times as you want. Your will doesn't matter until you actually die. So it's the will that you have at the time that you die that counts.
Right.
Every time you sign one, you revoke the last one. So one reason to not is if you're getting into, like, we don't often get into specific details of here's who gets my wedding ring and here's who gets my prize, whatever, China. Yeah,
China that collection. Stuff. That's where my brain went to, too.
So yeah, we may not say that, but some people do. And if you say, this one of my kids is getting the diamond ring, and then 5 years down the road, you change your mind, and you may not want them to know that you made that change. So that's one reason that people don't, is just because they're like, well, if I may change this, don't want anyone to know. Sometimes it may be that somebody's being written out, which is a whole other thing, or somebody's getting more than somebody for various reasons, so they just don't want anyone to know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I get that. It does make sense, the nitty gritty. Like, not, I wouldn't share the details of the will, but I don't think I'd have an issue with saying we wrote our will today, or we signed our will, or we did some estate planning. Here's where to find it in the case that we bite the dust. Like, you know,
I think there's a lot of people that have issues with boundaries and privacy.
Yeah.
And will push on that and right, demand and say, well, I want to know, like, am I on it? And I want to know if I'm on it. I have a right to know. Like, I feel like I totally get why you would just want to keep that quiet for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to two things you said, Kelly. One, and this is more of a comment, but why isn't the government's will or language, who updates that? Whose responsibility is that to change, like, you know, those terms you mentioned that are just so out of date?
So that's the legislature.
That's wild
and
to me.
And the funny thing with it is, well, it's not funny at all, but they were actually trying to update it. And this was to fix the common law partner problem.
Right.
So right before everything shut down with COVID, they had a session all around Nova Scotia talking about the common law partner update and including them. So what they were pitching was that it would be 2 years in. So you had to live together for 2 years and then you were common law partners, which everybody's on board with because everyone already thinks that's the law.
Anyway, I totally thought it was. Yep.
What we all criticized was that they also wanted to have a rule that it was 2 years out. So you had to be living apart for 2 years to no longer be common law partners. And there has to be some form of some way to know.
That's a long time.
When that's exactly what it was. So the lawyers all pushed back and said, a lot of us anyway, pushed back and suggested, why don't we go with 1 year? Because it has to be enough time that you actually establish, look, these people don't live together anymore. And there's situations that people separate and get back together. So it had to be a certain amount of time. 1 year may even be too much. But that was the feedback they got, was largely that, why don't we do 1 year instead of two? So that was probably February 2020. And that's when there was supposed to be a recommendation going to the provincial government to change this. Most other provinces have updated that.
Okay. Well, that's,
So hopefully it's coming, but in the meantime, make an appointment with Kelly.
Not to make light of this situation, but I just had a thought in my head of, like, how many situations I know where a common law partnership has broken off and within a 2 year span, they were with new people and, like, married. Like, they would still be considered the common law partner of the other spouse. Like, that seems wild to me.
Yeah. Well, and if they get married, that's another thing.
Does that end it?
Well, they haven't published this yet. So I don't know what exactly they were thinking. But when you get married, it even, like, revokes your will. So I would be fairly comfortable to say that it would, if you actually went and got married, that would change it. But if you were common law with somebody else, that's where you could run into
interesting
problem.
Yeah, which, I mean, that happens a lot. The other thing was one of the very first things you said, Kelly, about the bank accounts. And I'm just thinking of, like, you know, you were saying all your holdings and where's what and who's in what's name or whatever. And, like, my husband and I have separate bank accounts. And I just had the thought, like, do I have him anywhere on that bank
account?
Like,
I mean, I don't have Daniel on my bank account.
I don't think I do.
And we have
asked me that when I changed my name on the bank account when I got married? Would they have asked me? I can't
recall. Probably not. Because a lot of people do keep their bank accounts separate.
Yeah.
And that's a key reason, even if you're a single person and you have a bank account, then one, the power of attorney is going to be really important because no one other than you can access that account. So if anyone ever needed to do it.
So stressful.
So if there was ever, like, if you were incapacitated and you needed to pay for stuff, then nobody has access to the account.
Wow.
So that's what the power of attorney grants somebody. And some people are hesitant of wanting to do a power of attorney because you're giving someone a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's super important to have in that situation. And what a lot of people don't realize, so the government changes the laws a fair amount. They change the laws for somebody to apply to the court and become appointed as what we call a representative. So that's what happens if you don't have a power of attorney. Somebody has to apply to the court. There's a process of what they have to bring forward. There's things like they have to get a criminal record check. They have to develop a plan of everything they're going to do. It's a fairly lengthy application. That was updated in 2017. And it's in response to people abusing these things. So you may have heard of the Landon Webb case in Nova Scotia. It was in Truro. And it was a younger guy. His parents were managing a lot of stuff for him because they had him declared, they used to use the term incompetent. So they were managing a lot. And the government reacted to that by being really protective with people becoming appointed as somebody's, what we call now, representative. So like we've done a few applications to get somebody appointed. It's really hard for us to do that for less than $5,000.
Wow.
And it's often like you're looking more like 10. And if you get into, like, if there's a contest over who's going to be the representative, like you can get into tens of thousands of dollars to get somebody appointed. And that there are certain situations where that needs to happen. So if you have a bank account that needs to be accessed and you're the only name on it, then the only way to do it, if you don't have a power of attorney, is that type of application. The other place that people don't realize is if two people, like spouses, hold a property together, then if they go to sell the property and they're both still alive, both have to sign the deed. So if one spouse doesn't have capacity and can't sign, the other spouse has to apply to the court, which is that minimum $5,000 process. If you use a lawyer and you're looking at that in order to sell it, and if you go that route, it is a bit different than a power of attorney too. The court supervises it in that sense. They do supervise power of attorneys, but in order to sell property, you have to apply to the court again to actually have the sale approved.
Wow.
So you can see how that would be really hard too. Like if one of the spouses is unexpectedly losing capacity, you can see that somebody may have to sell a home because we had two incomes and now we're down to one. We may not be able to afford our house anymore.
Right.
So then it becomes we have to sell the house, which is then made even worse by the fact now we're applying to the court. We have this extra expense. We're already struggling.
Wow. The more we get into this, the more terrifying it is. It's just, and a lot of people had questions about the fact that, like, how do we make things easier for the people that we're leaving all this to? Right. So like, what do you have the exact question there, Sarah? But it was kind of like the cost of all of this stuff after.
Anchored Ideas is Kate Breton's leading marketing and communications agency. Known for their heart and hype, big dreams for Cape Breton Unimogi fuel their creativity. Here, there is no divide between business and community. Your neighbors and friends may very well also be your family. And when local businesses are doing well, we're all rising together. For these reasons and more, when the team at Anchored Ideas work with a client, it's personal. They're proud to be there for the big wins, the hurdles, and all the moments in between. They help you build your brand, define your difference, and connect you with those who matter. This signature heart and hype is the core of everything they do at Anchored Ideas. And we know firsthand that this team of powerhouse professionals are exactly who you need to speak to when trying to bring your vision to life.
We had a few people write in. One I thought was really impactful, a listener, when she knew we were getting ready to talk to you about estate planning, Kelly. She just said, like, she can't recommend having a will and a plan enough. And so if anyone out there is skeptical of a lawyer telling us all of this, this comes from a firsthand experience of someone who says, like, no, you need a will because they just spent an entire year dealing with their in-laws, so her partner's dad's estate after he had passed, and he had no will and no plan. And she said it was absolute torture for the whole family. And it's still not over. So she said she couldn't wait to listen to the podcast to hear more about it. But she just said it's something she had never considered being in her early 30s until now. And now she tells anyone who will listen how important it is. So some of the questions that came in around that same kind of idea is to, how do you make sure anything you leave behind is the most cost effective for your beneficiaries? And I think to kind of double up on a question there someone else had asked, which I assume might be a similar answer, is how to avoid huge costs and taxes to the person who would receive a house from a parent if they pass. So maybe those are two very different answers, but maybe it's kind of in the same realm of information if you want to share on those things.
Definitely doing the estate planning. And I guess I can throw in here just to give a sense, because we've talked about numbers a little bit. I think a lot of people are surprised on how much estate planning actually costs. So to give you a sense, we, for a couple to do all of the documents, so the will, power of attorney, personal directive, and also appointing a guardian in the event of incapacity, we start at $800. And that's for both, plus tax.
So wait, did you mean people are surprised thinking it costs more or costs less?
I think a lot of people think it costs more.
Yeah, okay. I was thinking it was going to cost way more. Like, I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a fairly flat rate, and that's going to apply to most people. Like it can get more expensive if you're like super detailed, extra work for us where we have to draft all kinds of new stuff because of what you want to do. But for most, especially most of the people that I assume are going to be listening, I would say for a couple, for the full package, you're looking at $800 plus tax, minimal disbursements. For a single person, it's $600.
Okay.
Well, then I will say I am offering your listeners $100 off that. So you're looking at $700 for a couple. And so that is a huge savings when you're talking about not having a power of attorney. You're looking at an application to the court for $5,000.
Absolutely. Yeah, like that, I mean,
not to mention the absolute stress and trauma that it causes to family if you don't have that in place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
100% worth it.
Well, and having it in place, that's a huge place to save money, because if your family can't agree, it can get really expensive. So if they can't agree on who's going to, it's called a personal representative. If you don't have a will, because the executor is the person you name in a will. But if you don't have a will that names somebody and somebody has to come forward and act, if your family can't agree on that, you can be looking at a couple thousand dollars right there in doing applications to decide even just who's going to be the one to act.
And it's just not a conversation you want to be having at that time.
No. And one good thing about doing it too emotionally is it kind of saves people, especially like if parents are concerned about their kids, like wanting them to get along after they pass away. Mm-hmm. One thing is, if you do it in the will, your kids, if they aren't happy about it, they don't have to blame each other.
Yeah, they blame you.
They can blame you. Yeah. You're no longer here.
Exactly. And I feel like nothing fuels a fire more than grief and money. Like, you know, like if there's any tensions, you pour a little grief and you pour money conversations or issues on top of that, that's just going to fan the flame, right?
Yeah. No. And then on the question of like avoiding tax, I think one thing that I will say, a lot of times, like I'll do estate planning with people and calculate what we call probate tax. So probate tax is what you pay if a will actually has to go to court and get approved, which is most cases, like if you hold anything in your own name, your will probably has to be probated. A lot of times, like with spouses, you may only have to do one because they hold everything jointly. But then when the second passes, we have to probate. And when that happens, you do pay tax to the probate court, which is calculated based on the value of the estate. And for years, there's been a real push where people are like, I don't want to pay any probate tax because they just think tax, huge amount of money. I will say that like people were putting their kids on title on their properties, like signing deeds and adding somebody, and that caused a lot of problems. Because now, like if you add your kid onto your property, let's say it's you and your spouse and your kid now, the three of you own it, like you and your spouse can't sell it without your kid signing off. So people were running into those types of issues, and there were a ton of problems coming up with it. So I'll often calculate the probate tax for people and say, look, like if your estate's worth this much money when you die, here's what you're going to be looking at for probate tax. And it's generally a lot less than people think. So your first $100,000, it's $1,000.
Oh, wow. So when you say estate, how much your estate is worth, is that all of your assets or is that just your property?
So it's only the things that actually have to go through probate. So let's say you and your spouse have a joint bank account. Mm-hmm. That will pass to the spouse automatically on your death. So that's not counted.
Okay.
Or if you have, like, some people will have an RRSP and mm-hmm. they'll designate a beneficiary on it. Mm-hmm. If you do that, it also passes outside the estate. So that doesn't count.
Okay.
The same as if there's two people as joint tenants on a property, then that can pass outside. So we don't include anything that can pass outside. Okay. It's just whatever has to go through.
Okay.
So it would be like your bank account that's in your own name. If you're the only one on your property, that goes through. Properties go through at their tax assessed value.
Okay.
So for most people, that's a little less than the market value.
Yeah.
So that's what you pay the probate taxes on. But it really depends on how you set things up. Like some people will try to make absolutely everything joint, like their bank accounts, because they're like, I'm not paying probate taxes. That in and of itself can result in problems. Especially when it comes to, like, if you have a trust in your will for kids, if you have stuff passing outside the will, so let's say you make your kids beneficiaries on your life insurance policy, that's going to go outside the will. So it's not going to be part of the trust. And let's say your trust says your kids don't get it until they're 25. That term isn't going to apply to something that passes outside.
Right.
So the life insurance policy beneficiary designation may see the kids get it at 19. So that you have to be careful of that. Mm-hmm. So sometimes somebody would just prefer have it go through the estate. And there's different reasons for that because you have the court supervision over it. It may make more sense. I also recommend it sometimes just to make everything transparent with the family. Because if you're going to make one of your kids joint on everything to avoid the probate tax, and everything passes outside the court, there's no disclosure to the family about here's what was there, then that can result in fights and disputes. And it may just not be worth it. Like most of the time when we send an estate down to probate, we're usually looking at between like $1,000 and $4,000 in probate taxes. Now we do have some that are larger and you pay obviously more. But for a lot of people, that's the range you're looking in.
Right.
And for that level of avoiding disputes and having everything be transparent for everyone, making sure that whatever you've said in your will applies, that can be worth it. So that's why we'll look at that. So that's, I guess, a non-answer to the question is that there's lots of stuff you can do to avoid paying tax and completely minimize. And if that's what you want to do, we can do that. But it may not be a great fit for everybody to try and avoid that. But there's other things we can do to avoid, like, you can get into really detailed estate planning to avoid paying taxes. One thing that a lot of people don't realize, though, too, if your parents are living in their principal residence, I think that was the question that came up with your parents transferring a home to the kids and avoiding paying tax on that. So when the parents die, if the home was their principal residence, there is an exemption from the capital gains tax that would normally apply when you dispose of property, if it was the principal residence. So a lot of times there's not going to be tax there if it goes through the estate, provided the people who passed away were living there up until their death.
Right.
You're just going to be looking at taxes more so when it goes into somebody else's name. Let's say you now have two homes because you own your parents' home and your home. You can't have two principal residences.
Okay.
So, and there's not much you can do there. But a lot of people, like, mistakenly think that like there's an inheritance tax in Canada, which there isn't. So if your parents, let's say the house is sold and everybody gets $20,000, the beneficiaries aren't paying taxes on that. So you'd only look at paying taxes on what you're receiving if it's actually like in an income generating. So if there's an investment and it's actually paying out income every year, then you're looking at taxes.
Right.
But if we're just taking the proceeds of the sale of the home and paying it out to everybody, then it's just the probate taxes that are coming off the top. Like I said, those aren't huge, but there's not a straight inheritance tax.
And then it's a lump sum for everyone paid out from that after that.
Yeah.
So you said if a spouse dies, it goes into like that property, shared property. If your name's on both, it goes to the spouse. If both pay, like in the case that my husband and I were to die at the same time, does the house go through probate then before whomever else gets it that we've named in the will kind of thing? Or our kids?
Yes. So okay. If there's nobody on, no one else on title, then it would have to go through probate in order for someone to have the authority to sign a deed.
Right. Okay. Wow. There's so much to it. I was just going to ask, one of the questions we had from a listener is, what is the role of the executor of estate?
I think it's best to almost think of this person as someone you're hiring to be the manager of your estate.
Right.
So they have to follow the will, if there's a will. But if it's an executor, it's a will. So they have to follow what you've directed, but they have certain obligations. So that's the person that's going to apply to the court to get the court to give them the authority to deal with the assets. After they open the estate, they have to file an inventory where they confirm, here's everything that is part of this estate, and they put a value on it. And then they'll deal with filing your taxes, taking care of making sure the bequests all go out. If you have any debts or there's claims against your estate, that person deals with those things. And they're going to be the person that coordinates with the beneficiaries and lets them know, here's where we're at, here's when you might expect to get your money, stuff like that. It's not a job that many people envy. It is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And you want to certainly make sure you have somebody responsible in that job.
That was my next question, is if you could give some advice or characteristics on who you're typically recommend to be an executive estate. If someone says like, who should that be? What do you typically tell people for that?
You definitely want someone you trust. If you have somebody who's fairly diplomatic, gets along with everybody, is probably a good idea. Sometimes, like if somebody has a background in accounting, not necessarily that they're an accountant, but if they're accounting, mm-hmm. they're familiar with law, stuff like that, just because there is a lot of processes that people aren't going to be familiar with. But it really is something like most people, I would say, do come to a lawyer for help in administering the estate. So like we do guide people through that process. So the biggest thing a lot of times for them is the fact that they have to actually deal with the family.
Right. If they're not coming to you for that help, who holds the executor of your estate? Or how do we make sure that that person is following the will? Does anyone check in on that?
Yeah. So there's a probate court which deals specifically okay. with estate. And everyone who gets a grant of probate is accountable to that court.
Right.
And if you're not doing your job, so you have to like that inventory has to be filed after 3 months. If you don't do it, they will come looking for you basically.
Okay.
And they can actually revoke your grant.
Okay. Wow. Jess, did you have a question? Sorry.
No. I was just thinking like, anyway, I'm like thinking about my executor. I'm like, hey, who is it? This person or this person? There's only two options.
Well, that's yeah, one of the other yeah. questions on here, because you're probably thinking of the kids too. Like,
yes.
you know, as a parent, who do you want?
I already know who that is. But
a question yeah. we had here was naming guardians for children in wills. So mm-hmm. any advice around that?
In that
piece?
Conversation, like, so hey, is it all right if I put you down to have responsibility?
Yeah.
You know
that's
what I mean?
That's a real conversation. Patrick and I have had that many times and how to approach it. Like you don't want to put someone on the spot, but it's a serious conversation you don't want to just like shoot off a text about. So what is the right way to go about that? Who to determine who that should be and how to approach that conversation with somebody?
Yeah. Well, and the biggest thing that comes to mind is definitely make sure you have the conversation
right.
because you don't want to surprise someone with that.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, and that's a big one. So that's one that could change over time because for some people, at a certain point in your life, people you pick may be your parents.
Right.
And they may always be who you pick, but you're going to obviously want to pay attention to your parents' age and whether or not.
And their health.
That's
and
something right. that they can take on, and also whether it's something they want to take on.
Right.
But it may be like some people, you may have siblings that you would want to appoint, but if they're younger, you're not comfortable with that at this stage.
Right.
And both parents need to be on board with it
yes.
too, because you
right.
both want to appoint the same person is important. Definitely important if the parents aren't together that they talk about that and try and work it out, which can be tricky. And I think that's probably going to be the hardest thing for anyone to think about is I'm sure most people can't imagine anyone other than themselves
right.
raising their kids. And when you sit back and think, like, you're probably not going to have somebody who you know is going to do everything exactly as you would want it done.
Yeah.
So it's kind of who's going to be the most suited to this. And both parents think about it.
And not to, I'm not trying to be funny when I say this, but you also have to consider like the implications financially and like it could be a burden to some people's lifestyles. Like maybe they didn't want any more children or children at all, or the financial burden that might come along with that, depending on when that happens and the ages involved. And there's a lot that's layered, yeah. right? Sometimes it's not necessarily just like who you think will love your kid the best, but
right.
who's able to really who's take able. On that 100%. Responsibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing. Like you can do this, and that's, I guess, important to know. You can do this once because a lot of times we'll, like, even if you have more kids, you can name somebody, and we'll usually use the language, especially for younger people, like any child of mine alive at the time. So it would include all of them, even if they're not all born. But something to keep in mind is if you do pick someone and you talk to them about it when you have one kid, if you now have four,
and then you have twins 2 years later.
Wait, yeah. I didn't sign up for this. I only want one.
Well, and yeah. that's really important because you can't actually force somebody to be the guardian. And that's actually in the legislation that talks about this, is that the parents can, either in a document or in their will, name somebody to be the guardian of the kid. So then it says right below that the person does have to consent to this.
Right.
So you can't, they're not forced, they're not automatic. But no, it is automatic in the sense that they don't have to apply to the court to get a grant of probate
right.
before it comes into play. It comes into play as soon as you die, if it's in your will.
But they could say
no. But that's
no.
why you're going to want to have talked to them first so you know that they're going to agree to this.
Yeah.
But I do think, and this is kind of separate from the question, but I do think that when you think about this, if we're considering like both parents passing away, and the kids are still minors, I think it's really important to have this in place so that if somebody has to break that news to the kids and completely traumatize them, that like both of your parents just died, that they can say, look, here's who's going to take care of you right off the bat. So it's known.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have that decided, it's up to like family, friends, whoever it's going to be. They have to apply to the court.
Yeah.
And ask to be appointed. So you could end up in a situation where there's competing applications. And so they really don't know who's going to end up. And it's not uncommon that, for example, when you have, I mean, every kid has two parents in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So when you're talking about two parents, you're also talking about two families.
Families.
Right.
And it's not uncommon for both families to think, well, you're going to be the best.
Right.
To parent the grandkids. So you can get into fights where two sets of grandparents are fighting over kid.
Right.
And at that point in the kid's life, like you do want to be able to give them
stability.
At least most people are going to want to give them stability and say, look, here's your mom and dad took care of this.
Here's the plan.
Yeah.
And I think too, like being in the social services field, my head, like I always go to like very bad places. But like you would hope that somebody would step in if and say like, I'm going to take them in until, you know, all this is dealt with. But you do worry about foster care. Like if you don't have anything in place, like they got to go somewhere. And that would be like my absolute worst fear.
Kelly, just to make sure everyone's on the same or has the same understanding, you said if they're still minors, is that under the age of 18 in this case?
19 in Nova Scotia.
19 okay. in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
Okay. That's important to know.
Well, now once you get to a certain age, you may not, like they kind of are going to decide what they want to do. It's the same in family law cases, but it is the age of majority is 19.
Legally, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The other thing too there is like, you don't have to be, nobody has a crystal ball. So like, it's not a perfect science that like, you can't sit down and say like, okay, who's going to be the best person in 20 years?
Right.
If you've appointed somebody and like, they're not appropriate to act for some reason, the court can step in and say, like, ultimately, they're going to look at the best interest of the kid. So if for some reason, like you've appointed somebody, it hasn't been updated, and at this point in time, it's just completely not appropriate, that can be overturned. And so the court can step in, somebody can apply and challenge it. But by having it in place, you at least have, here's the starting point. Here's what we want to happen. And then you just kind of have to keep it in the back of your mind that if there's dramatic changes of circumstances with those people, like maybe you pick somebody and they marry somebody that you absolutely can't stand.
Right.
And you just kind of have to keep in the back of your mind that like, this is who I've appointed. So maybe we have to revisit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not to say that like most people aren't going to change their will and everything every year, but you do want to kind of periodically take a look at this stuff and make sure like, does this still make sense?
How often can you update that will, Kelly? You can update it as much as you want, as many times a year. I assume there's a charge each time you do it. Is it something that has to be done in like the physical space? Is it an email? Is it a phone call? What does that usually look like?
It does have to be re-signed. My preference is like you can do edits, changes. My preference is just to re-execute just because it makes everything clearer that you can read it all in one document. But it does have to be like properly witnessed. We still like we can't in Nova Scotia yet do virtual wills or anything like that. So you do have to do it. You have to have two witnesses. So like when we do it, we have me and one of our assistants usually in the meeting to be the two witnesses. But when we change a will, like if you're just changing a name, that's super easy for us to do. And when we get into that stuff, we just do the charges based on like how much time it actually took us to do. So like you're not paying for a whole new package again unless we're actually redoing
the whole thing.
The will.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I think that's important for people to know, right? Because I think if we're going to do it early or if they feel like it's early and they're young and they're going to have a million changes, then maybe that it just gets them deeper and deeper into money. But it's not necessarily, you know, you're not paying that full package every time you want to update that will if as your life changes and as your decisions may evolve from that. Is there an ideal age? Is that 30, you know, that magical 30th birthday is when you should think of that estate planning? Is it earlier? Like what is the average age of someone you see estate planning? And what do you think that age should be? Like when do you recommend someone comes in?
It's really going to depend on their own circumstances. Average age, to be honest, it's at least 60.
Wow.
I feel like it's maybe even 70.
Wow.
It is that's what I said.
I'm like, literally, I don't know if my parents have done this. Like I have I'm majorly concerned. Like it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever because my mother lives in this world where she's invincible and she's like, oh, I'm to do that right now. Like, you know, and like, it's a real thing. Like it's a real thing where people truly don't think about it.
Yeah. No. And it's more kind of a life where you're at in life and what you have. Like you definitely want to do it once you have kids.
Yeah.
So that can be a very different age for anyone.
Yeah, some people that's 22 and some people that's 37. So that's, you're right. That can be that age is varying.
Yeah. If you have kids, you're going to want to do it. And in a sense, for a lot of people, it's going to be tied to those kids. So you're going to want to do one once you have kids and then you're just kind of paying attention. Did anything change? Then once your kids are adults and settled in their own lives, you're probably going to want to do it again in part because a lot of people are going to want to make the kid the executor.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And then you're going to take out things like saying that we're holding it in trust for the kids and pay for their education once they get through all that. We don't need that anymore, which at a certain age, like that's just not going to apply anyway once because we'll say whatever. We always pick, like it may be that you hold it until they're 23, 25, like that's completely up to the people making the will. But once they've crossed that age and they're getting things themselves, like we'll usually do an update and say, okay, the kids get it themselves. And then we turn our minds, even if you don't have grandkids yet, we'll often start thinking about the grandkids. So we'll say everything equally to all of my children. Mm-hmm. And if any of them have predeceased me leaving their own children, then their share goes to their kids.
Right. Wow.
So interesting.
It really is.
It's eye-opening. Not interesting, eye-opening. It's interesting, but it's eye-opening. I wonder how many people are listening to this right now being like, oh my God. Like we don't mean to panic you, but like, I'm panicked. I'm panicked. I'm like, when's your next appointment available? What's your availability look like?
No, and it is. Like that's going to be for most people. But there's other people that it's going to be super important. If you separate but don't divorce, you definitely want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because your spouse is still your spouse.
Mm.
So if something happened to you, they would be entitled just like you were still together. So that's super important. If you're in a long-term common law relationship, you'll probably want to do this too. if you own business assets, it's also important to make sure your business can continue to run if something happens.
And can that all be included?
Make sure that's straight.
Is that all the same will, just like various documents or phrases or whatever within it? But if you do your will, and that covers a lot of your personal stuff, but if you own businesses as well, you can kind of lay out those wishes in that document as well. Is that fair? Like that's all kind of
the same. To an extent. So there's more that you can do, and you'd want to meet with somebody who does a lot of corporate work. So in our office, that's going to be like Robert and Tyler do a ton of corporate work.
Right.
So you'd want to meet with somebody like that with the company itself. But relative to like owning the shares in a company, that is dealt with in your will. And that can be transferred a lot easier if you do take care of that. And it's obviously important because you want to know who's in control.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah.
Definitely.
I think a common maybe fear or discomfort or wonderment that some people our age or demographic may be having is if they feel like you said at this age, we maybe not have a lot of assets, we have a lot of debt. Like, what does that mean? And I think maybe some people may feel uncomfortable with coming in and sitting down and talking about finances. And maybe they feel a little embarrassed about where they are financially in life. Or maybe they feel like they don't really have anything that they need to leave to anyone. What do you say to those people? Like, is that a common misconception? Can we myth bust that a little bit? Like you said before, even some of that debt you need to have a plan for. So what does that look like? What do we tell people who might be feeling a little gun shy to kind of start this process?
Well, you definitely don't have to come in and tell us. Like, if you have a mortgage, I don't need to know how much you owe. I will probably say, especially like if we're talking younger people, do you have a mortgage? Do you have mortgage insurance on it? That's definitely important to make sure either that you have mortgage insurance or life insurance policy that will make sure that gets covered. So we can talk about that without actually getting into numbers. A lot, like, we don't really have to get into the specifics of what you have. Sometimes it is relevant if we're getting into things like tax planning. But for us to take care of the really important stuff that's going to be the most important for parents, which is probably just going to be who's taking care of the kids. I mean, we don't have to get into any finances. Oh,
isn't that interesting? Yeah. I think that's a common misconception. I think people think it's like looking at bank statements and like figuring out what's what, you know?
No, so we don't have to do that again. Sometimes we'll talk about it just from tax planning, but a lot of times, like, I don't know what exactly people have. We certainly don't have to if they don't want to get into that. And then I think some people probably think too, like when I say like a trust, people think like a trust fund kid.
Right.
And that's not true either. It just, the trust means that somebody is responsible for managing the money for the kids. And then we can give them whatever power you want. So it's just to dole out money to them.
Right.
To make sure they're taken care of. If some people will want to include like that they can pay for their education. Like I've done it where we'll say that we're paying for their living expenses while they're in university, that stuff. And it's really up to the parents what they want. But just because we're providing for that stuff, even if you don't have the money to actually pay for university tuition, but we've given the authority, like if you don't have it, you don't have it. And the question is at the end, at your death, what do you have? Not what do you have today? So we cover it off. And I mean, you can't give away what you don't have.
Right.
So you don't really have to worry about that too much. Obviously, if there's a huge change in your financial circumstances, that may be something that makes you want to look at doing your will again.
Right.
But it is really important for everyone, even if you don't think you have anything.
Right.
If you have kids, you definitely want to do it. But even if you don't, if you have a house and there's a huge mortgage on it, if there's insurance, then you actually do have likely a really large asset.
Yeah.
And so you may want to think about who gets that.
Right.
And what happens to it. But no, I certainly wouldn't be turned off doing this if you just don't think that you have that much money. Because one, your kids are, that's going to be the most important thing, is making sure you have a plan for them. Where do they go? Not even just the money side, but in dealing with money, you probably do have more than you think.
Yeah.
Because it's not about what you have today. It's what you have at the time of your passing.
That's important to remember, I think.
And so we try and cover off. And a lot of this is going to be really general to everyone. So this isn't going to be super tailored. When we have a conversation about specific assets and what people want to do, then we may get into more specifics. And that's a lot of times led by the client telling me what they have and what they have questions about. And I will go through certain questions and talk to people. But I mean, if you don't want to tell me something, if you want to say none of your business, I'm not going to be offended.
Right. Yeah, that's
so
right.
So it's really, I mean, I can only help you based on what I actually know.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you have to tell me everything. We can do a really general will for somebody just to make sure that it at least
covered.
Is probably going to suit you better than the government's will.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It gives you a little bit of control or some of that, you know, planning piece to it.
What are we expecting? Like, I know you're going to talk us through all this. Like, this has been so, like, it's been so knowledgeable. And I'm already thinking, like, should I be writing this all down?
Yeah.
You're going to, like, I'm assuming, like, go through all this. Like, you're going to bring up these points. Because I'm thinking, like, what if we don't ask the right questions? Or, you know, like, just quickly talk through, like, what happens during that visit.
Well, and in part, it really depends on the client's preference.
Okay.
So I have a new thing that I'm trying, which I sent you guys earlier today our new online form, which is my online form. So if somebody wants, you don't actually have to set up a meeting with me. You don't even have to call. We do have a link to fill out an online form, and that gives us your really basic information. But you can check it out online and see the kind of information that we require just to look through it. You want to fill it out and submit it. Then that gives us your information on things like who you are, who your spouse is, if you have kids, who they are, who you're thinking for an executor, who you're thinking for a guardian, who you're thinking power of attorney, personal directive. So we'll ask you all those questions. And all you really have to give us at that stage is like the names. And there's some yes or no questions about like, if you were to pass away, would you want everything to go to your spouse if they survived you? If we're talking about kids, is everything going to them equally? What are you thinking about when's the appropriate age for them to receive it? So we ask a lot of, they're pretty simple questions to give us the basic information. If you go that route of filling out that form, we can then prepare draft documents that we get ready. And then we give you a call to book an appointment. And that's when you sit down with me. I go through them with you. I'll talk to you about them a bit more broadly to make sure we've covered everything off. There may be certain things that I read in your information that flag something that, oh, we need to deal with this because you left out one of your kids. So there's an extra step we have to do. So we talk about that in the meeting. But that's one route that we're trying. And the reason I'm doing that is because I want to make it more accessible to people. Because I think
right. The
people our age don't necessarily want to pick up the phone and call us.
I don't know if they even know where to start.
Right.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the form because you can sit down on the couch with your partner and or yourself and just browse through it and say like, and have that conversation at home in the comfort of your home instead of sitting in an office being like,
I think this is a really accessible way to do it. I think you're right to introduce people to the topic. We have the form, and Kelly, if it's okay with you, we can link the form in our episode notes. So anyone listening can just read the episode notes and click the link and you'll be taken straight to this Google form. I'm looking at it now. Kelly created it. There's about 27 questions. Like she said, some of it is just yes or no's or your names, like super easy to understand, super digestible.
So you did mention that for all of the listeners, there's $100 off for your service. How does one claim that? Like, I wrote it in the notes to remember some, like, is there a secret code? Like, is there a password? Like, what's the password?
I will say that's just me too. I don't want people going in and doing their estate planning with the other lawyers and being like, well, Kelly said you were going to give me $100 off.
So yeah, that only is for just Kelly.
Just Kelly.
Kelly, we can put your contact information in the episode notes as well. So people can contact you. Is that the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can reach out. So I can give you my email and phone number. And if people don't want to do the form, like some people do prefer to come in and actually talk through everything, I'm happy to do that. And we certainly can. We also have other versions of the form. Like if you're not super high tech and you want a printed version,
boomers,
we do have a different form that we can send you. So you can email us and we can send that to you if you prefer. Or if you want to do a sit-down meeting to talk about your instructions, we can do that. It is like, and I hate to say this because I don't want people to think that like I'm charging you more because I don't want to meet with you. It's not that at all. But if you do want to do the two meetings, is it like it's a slight step up. So we charge another $200 to have
that
meeting.
Makes sense.
It's not because I don't like meeting with people. It's just because it takes more time. And we try to make it accessible, like doing, if you want to do the form, then that saves us time. So we'll make it less expensive.
And it saves us money. You.
I also think if you're doing the form, it may give you the space and time you need to have some of those conversations 100%. Or considerations without That's someone else in thinking. The room staring yes. at you. Like, what are you going to do about that kid? Like,
exactly
you know, like
what I said. Yeah.
It's like, ooh, okay. I think I'm not ready to fill out this question. I'm going to come back to it once I thought about it for a few minutes. Right. Saves everybody.
Yeah. And it
time.
Does like, if you want to go on there and take a look, you can see exactly the kind of information that we need to know and think about it, fill it out later. Like it's whatever you're comfortable with. And there is room on the form. Like if there is extra information that you want us to know, there's a spot where you can fill that out. Yeah. I don't want people to think that if you fill something out there that you're going to get upcharged. Like most people, it is going to be that flat rate. So feel free to give us the information. It's good for us to have. If there's something that you don't know, you can put that in there. You can give us a call while you're filling it out, after you fill it out. And then you will have usually at least an hour with us where we go through everything. Right. I talk to you about what's in there. And I will ask you in that meeting other things that aren't in there that should be talked about. So we do get that face time to talk about everything, but it's after you've had the chance to kind of look at those initial questions and kind of talk. If there is a spouse or if there's other people that you have to talk to about this, it gives you that opportunity. But you can even, like, the form can be filled out on a computer, but it can also even be done on your phone. So theoretically, you could be like laying in bed to fill it out.
Yeah.
I love it.
So easy.
So is there a code or are we just...
Oh, sorry. Yes. So at the very end of the form, it says, how did you hear about us?
Okay.
So if you heard about us through your podcast, you would say morning meeting, and then we know to apply $100 off.
Awesome.
We will offer it to the attendees of the event. So they could say they heard about it through Wine and Guine.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, we're humans reading the forms. So you can pretty much say anything related to you guys and we'll figure out that's where it came from.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Or if you call, just mention it. Or if you send us an email, same thing. Just say something that can let me figure out that morning meeting, Sarah and Jess, the people on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Whatever.
Those crazy girl vibes.
Those two people talking about their mamas all the time. Let's talk about those girls. Oh gosh. I have one last question about the will, because I feel like the will is such like an important.
It's not. You should see paper. It. It's not. I said the same thing when I was like, let me see
this
will.
It should be like a scroll.
It's
like,
not though. I was like, this is it?
But I need to know, like we said, like you said, you know, you leave your office after making that will and you go by a safety deposit box or a fire safe box to put it in. Do we have one copy of that will? Is there a second copy kept somewhere else? Do we have like a...
I think that's why things go into probate, so that in case there is a second will somewhere, right? Like...
Kind
that someone
of.
Copied so that or something is, like
that's one concern. So there is only one original will.
Yeah. Okay.
Because whenever you sign a will, you revoke your previous.
The old
we
ones.
Only do one original. We do give you an unsigned copy.
Okay.
And it's up to you what you do with that. Like some people are going to put that in the fireproof safe too. If you're comfortable with it, you could give that to the executor.
Okay.
The unsigned copy can be used if something happens to the original.
So where is the original?
That's going to be in your fireproof safe.
Okay.
And that's the one that if you were to pass away, that's what we want to find is
the
original.
OG.
Yeah.
So
if we find the original, it's easier for everyone if you have the original, but we do open a fair amount of estates where for various reasons, somebody's original can't be found. And it's an application to the courts. So again, it does cost a bit more for us to do that. It's extra stuff. It takes a little bit longer, but it is fairly straightforward. So the copy is still valuable, but you do really want to do everything you can to make sure you don't lose the original. And if you ever find out that you've lost your original or your original is in the basement and the basement floods, you're going to want to get it re-signed, which again, that's something we still have it saved on our computer. We can print it out again, get you to come in, sign it again. I'm not going to charge you $800.
Okay, so that was my question, was we have the original signed copy in our FireSafe box whenever, but as the lawyer or the law firm, there is still an electronic copy on file somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that can be used too.
Okay.
So if it's everyone completely lost their copy, you can get ours printed and that can be used too. And it is easy for you to come back and get it printed off and sign it again.
That's good to know.
I think one last thing to clear up is I think people get these terms mixed up a lot. I know in a previous job I had working with the police department, people mixed it up a lot. And that is power of attorney and executor of estate. Mm-hmm. Do you ever hear that, Kelly, like on your front? People mixing 100% up those terms?
Or people confuse what, like when one ends. And I guess that's one thing I can clear up is, so your power of attorney is effective most of the time. The document, like the one that I'm primarily going to use, it comes into effect as soon as you sign it. So it's not just if you lose capacity.
Okay.
So it's effective as soon as you sign it, which can be good if you break a leg, things like that. You don't want to go to the bank, you get older, all that. So it is effective on signing, continues through incapacity, ends the second you die.
Okay.
So that person has no authority to do anything once you die.
Okay.
Once you die, it then falls to the executor.
Oh.
Your executor, so no one is your executor until you die.
Okay. Right.
And then they'll become your personal representative if they get a grant of probate. All of their power comes from the court. So they have to go say to the court, here's the will. Do you accept it? I'm willing to act. There's an application they fill out. And if the court accepts it, then they get a document confirming you're the personal representative. You have authority over the estate. And that's when their duties start. But
that makes
nobody
sense.
Has an executor until they die.
Oh, this has been so good. So informative. And it's one of those topics that like you don't really want to have, but at least we were able to do it around like this for obviously virtual table, but it felt like a safe space. It felt comfortable. And hopefully the listeners feel like that too. Like, of course, this is never easy. Like we don't want to think about passing away or our parents or whatever. But I think it's just really important to know and have the information at least so then we can make informed decisions on what we want to do moving forward. But I just want to thank you, Kelly, for making it so comfortable. Because it's just really not an easy, I don't find anyway, an easy conversation to have. So thank you for being so great. And I know that the listeners will feel that too.
Yeah, you made it so accessible and so mm-hmm. comforting and so normal, like almost so normal that I'm like, why didn't we do this yet? Right? Like this, these conversations can be
and you're so
easier than we've built them up in our brains about. And you're so knowledgeable.
I was just going to say that you're so knowledgeable and it makes me want to like sit in a room with you and learn more. Cause I'm like, okay, Kelly knows.
But
Kelly
also accessible because it's not, I don't feel like it's very digestible, like language to understand. And you know, so it makes us understand the importance of it in our lives, no matter where we're at. I also think it's especially important for our generation, knowing that we are almost are in that sandwich generation, right? Where we're raising young kids, some of us, or your counterparts maybe, as well as taking care of aging parents or considering what that may look like in the years to come. And you're a caretaker there for everyone. And I think it's important conversations for you to have personally. But also conversations like Jess and I started having at the start of this pod is maybe it's time to have those conversations with your loved ones, your aging parents, whomever, your siblings even, your friends, just to say, is this something you considered? Because I think like everything we talk about on the podcast, the more we just casually have these conversations mm-hmm. about these very important things, the less scary they become and the more normalized they become. And then the easier they are to talk and access the services that we may all need to kind of plan and make our lives a little bit more effective for ourselves mm-hmm. and our loved ones, right? Kelly, we'll have to email you tomorrow so we can book our estate planning appointments. We'll fill out the form first, I guess.
And yes,
we'll
got to fill out the form.
Yeah, no, if you want to fill out the form, then you don't even have to worry about contacting us. We'll contact you.
Right.
Perfect.
And you know who we are.
Brilliant.
So.
Yeah,
we'll just write at the end. It's me. It's us.
Yeah, and you don't even have to say morning meeting or anything at the end.
Right.
I'll figure that out.
Yeah, you'll put it together. Great. That's awesome. Well, thank you, Kelly. It's been so great. Thank you to Sampson McPhee Lawyers for always kind of putting our community first mm-hmm. and helping us through some really I was going to say special, but some really challenging times in
and
our
challenging
lives.
Times.
Yeah, it's important. And thank you for sharing this information, your knowledge and the accessibility. The form is awesome. We'll share all of your contact info in the episode notes, and we will see you in a few weeks in person
at
our Wine and Guine.
Woo!
Sponsored can't by wait. Sampson McPhee Lawyers. We can't wait either. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us around the table on this episode of The Morning Meeting with Sarah and Jess. If you're enjoying your time around the table, if you like what you're hearing, tell us, tell a friend. Wherever you listen to your podcast, you can like and subscribe. You can rate and review. We would appreciate it. It helps us. Help us help you. Make sure to subscribe so you never have to miss another morning meeting. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.